You are listening to The Tenants on the Kyle Dempster Studios Network. To support us, visit patreon.com/ Kyle Dempster Studios. Hello, everybody, and welcome back to The Tenets. My name is Kyle, and I'm joined here by my co-host, Stark Realm. Hello, Stark. How are you?
Hey, pretty good.
Good to hear. As you guys might notice, my voice is pretty destroyed today. We just got off of a 16-hour Twitch stream doing nothing but Elder Scrolls Online in the attempt to hit partnership, and we managed to do it. Thanks to all you amazing people out there. I know a lot of the people that are listening to the podcast are also people from that stream. But you guys did it. You did it. We got to the requirement, so now it's up to the application and the vetting process. So here we are, a decimated Kyle, and hopefully a well-rested Stark.
Yeah, a little bit.
Well, that should be enough to get you through today's topic, which is leveling in Elder Scrolls Online. Last night was a great example of... We had a lot of people coming into the stream saying, I'm new, I want to get the game, how do I do this? And we had some people that also say, I have it, but I'm not sure how things are working out. I don't know what to do. My character feels weak, this, that, and the other. And so it's always a good reminder. It was like, I don't know, 15 hours into the stream when we had this conversation, and Stark was there too, where people were talking about the podcast, what ideas to bring up in the future. And we're like, wow, we haven't really talked about distributing skill points and the leveling process as a whole. So we thought we would get into that today with you. So Stark, let's jump into the idea of how do you level? Because this comes up all the time. You've seen it.
Yeah. Oh, yeah.
So what do we do, Stark? What are our options for leveling?
Play the game. Okay. Yeah, that sounds wonderfully, you know, obvious. But no, seriously, when you get dropped into the game, you'll be put into places where you can run quests, you can experience the story. And at the beginning, that's actually the most vital thing, is simply go out there, run content, hit quests, and see the content that the game's going to offer you, because it's going to offer you enemies while you're still low level that will start getting you into a feel for how to deal with content as you progress.
So the idea of running your standard quests, things like the tutorial beyond, are actually a good idea? Gasp.
Yeah.
Wow. Yeah. But Stark, I heard that there's so many more options than that. I don't wanna quest like MMOs prompt me to do. What am I gonna miss out on if I skip questing?
You're going to lose out on skill points, because there are actually a fair number of skill points buried in the quests themselves. Throughout the game, there's 81 skill points, which is more than you'll get from leveling to 50, attached to completing specific quests. And that number will go up with the next release. We don't know how much, but there's going to be more skill points then, too. So there's a real incentive to get out there and hit content like that. You'll also run across things like sky shards as you're exploring, which means you'll get even more. And between quests and the sky shards, you'll find naturally exploring the environment. That's over 200 skill points.
Wow.
That's over half of the skill points available in the game that are tied either to exploring or doing the content that's put in front of you that way. Once you get to level 10, then it unlocks some other stuff, because then you have access to PvP and you have access to the dungeon finder. So if running the same, you know, if running specific group content and grinding that is your jam, then the Dungeon Finder is an excellent route. If PvP is really the thing you want to get into, then you can start getting into that in a fairly safe environment at low levels by jumping into either the campaigns or Battleground. But be warned, when you're doing PvP, you're going to run up against players who've been doing this much longer, but the game doesn't realize they've been doing it much longer because they're on low-level character. So you're going to get wrecked for a while you're learning how to PvP.
So far, we've got your idea of questing, this basic idea, getting into the world and unlocking skill points through quests. Now, before we move on too far from that, you get a lot. Yeah, I believe, is it 11 skill points from doing the Cold Harbor quest chain?
The Cold Harbor quest chain is 11.
And then For almost, for every, the main quest in each zone, it's about 3 points, if memory serves.
It's usually three. There's three exceptions to that, four exceptions to that, scattered around through the game. But yeah, you always get at least 3 skill points for running the quests, running through the main storyline of a zone.
Now, on top of that, as we go through, and as you guys, this is a little bit more of an endgame-y idea, but the idea of furniture collection and achievements. If you guys have been in any of your quest zones and noticed that there's an achievement vendor, you've probably seen they'll sell you some fancy-looking things for your house, maybe some really creepy-looking stuff that you really want to get your hands on, but it's locked. That would be achievement sort of stuff. And some of that is just locked behind the idea that maybe this questing zone requires that you complete 60 quests there. So there's some really, really some things you'll want to work towards. You know, if you already know that ESO is your jam and you want to make the creepiest castle in town, there's a lot of things that you can do by unlocking it. Take Rivenspire, for example. That's one of the ones that I did more recently, a zone that I had to complete because a lot of vampire themed gear there, which we're going to be talking about vampires later in detail or in a fair amount of detail.
Well, a little bit of detail for the XP progression. Yeah.
Yeah. And so overall, questing is going to give you this very holistic approach. Skill points, you're going to be running past sky shards, you're going to be unlocking achievements, and as you said, you're going to be encountering monsters that are equivalent to your character. So it's they're not going to wreck your face immediately, hopefully. But then, as soon as we ding level 10, we get options, is what I heard. Dungeon Finder and Battlegrounds.
Yep.
So running your Dungeon Finder, you have the option to queue up at level 10. And there is an option, well, when you're doing that, when you're running a random daily dungeon, you actually get bonus experience and rewards for doing it the first time each day. Is that right, Stark?
Yeah, that's correct. You get some bonus items just for running it ever. Like when you go in, you do this, you get the first time. The first time the bonuses will be better, and then you'll still continue to get bonuses. Specifically, I think that's where the agility, willpower, and endurance sets drop now.
Ooh.
So those are actually pretty useful at low levels when you're just starting out because they're very easy to complete sets. You only need 3 pieces. Or now, because of the way two-handed weapons work, if you're using a bow or a two-hander or staff, you only need 1 piece for that and then another piece either on your jewelry.
And one thing...
Go ahead.
Sorry, you Stark, finish your thought.
They're really nice sets just for starting out because they're a fairly strong bonus towards either using Magicka, so your healing or your Magicka DPS, or your stamina DPS builds on agility, and then endurance is really nice for tanks, straight up. Oh, hey, here's some health and some stamina recovery. So those are actually valuable tools early on when you're just learning the game.
Good point. One thing I just want to clarify quickly is when we say the first time you run your daily dungeon, first time each day it has
yeah,
that
each
advantage.
Time, each
not,
day, yeah.
Not the very first time ever that you run it, but each day there is a big incentivizer to actually, as you're in the leveling process, queue up for that. Now, here's an advantage that you can do. Let's say you're rolling a DPS who's notoriously takes a little longer in the Dungeon Finder to actually queue up, aside from a tank or a healer, for example. What you can be doing is you can actually be out there completing your quests in the world while you are queued up in the Dungeon Finder. So you can be double dipping. You can be doing your quest, killing your things, da-da-da-da. You always run the risk of, you know, the dungeon popping when you're in the middle of combat or, you know, some big boss fight. But still, you know, just so you're not waiting around in town all day to get into this dungeon, you can actually be out there in the Dungeon Finder while you're doing your other progression.
Yep. So it's kind of important here, though. The one thing we specifically did not list here as a good way to advance is grinding.
What?
This is mostly true. So you can, if you want to, you can go out, you can find an enemy. You want to get practice on fighting that kind of enemy, and you can grind on them for a while. But rather than just looking at, oh, hey, I'm getting XP, your focus there really should be, I'm trying to learn their movesets, trying to learn how they'll behave, rather than just going, yeah, I'm just going to keep leveling up, because you'll get better value for learning how they operate than you will from simply having more XP to work with.
Ooh, that's a normally, good
point. Normally, you really do not want to be grinding in ESO, just unless you're chasing after something specific or you're trying to practice on something. Because as much as you can just keep advancing and say, okay, well, I've got all this extra stuff on my character, it's far more important to have a better grasp of the game and the grasp of what you're dealing with. So the actual experience of working on an enemy and learning how they fight and learning what they'll do, and being able to recognize that that move set when you start seeing it pop up elsewhere on different enemies is way more valuable.
And let's take an eagle eye perspective here for a second and remind people. We've talked about this to some degree in the past on our previous two episodes here, but I still continue to see this question while we're live. People saying, the game doesn't start until I'm level 50, right? No,
nope.
You're thinking of a different game, my friend. This one is very open to you the entire time. You are about as able to do anything day one you can do day 50 plus.
There's only a few things that are gated off until you're higher level. We just mentioned two of them: battlegrounds and open world PvP. Like I shouldn't say open world, the campaign system in Cyrodiil, because that's where you have open world PvP. You don't have it, running around town. But those PvP systems don't unlock until you hit level 10, and the dungeon finder doesn't unlock, but you can simply go into any dungeon you want at any level.
Yeah.
So while you can't simply jump in and say, okay, I'm going to take my level 3 and inflict it on a group that wasn't prepared for that. If you've got friends and they're willing to work with you, you've got an actual group, you can go into any dungeon right off the bat as soon as you leave the tutorial. This includes the end game raiding content too. You can actually go into the trials on a level 3.
Wow.
You're not going to be a fantastic participant for that simply because you don't have a lot of skills available yet. But even as early as 15, you can participate fully in trials if you've got a group that's willing to run with you.
I think if you're coming from a different game, that might actually be like a jaw-dropping sort of statement, because
a little bit, yeah.
Notoriously, end game raids are you must be at end game like that. There are no ifs or whatever.
Yeah, and you will absolutely see players that continue to push that. Mm-hmm. And there is a little bit of a reason behind it, because the gear you get will level to you. So there's a strong incentive on trials to specifically cherry pick for players who are at champion point 160 or higher, because then everybody will be getting end game, final quality gear capped equipment, and they can trade it with each other with no problem whatsoever. But that doesn't actually bar you from the game, from actually running the content. And hilariously, I've got a level 4 with a Hellros Citadel clear on PCEU because they needed a live body. And it's like, well, I can get I've got a character on PCEU that basically only exists to look at the Ouroboros crates. So I can go in. And yeah, you can do this. You can go in, you can clear, you can participate. Not sure how much use I was, but there we are.
You were that one body.
Yeah, and you can absolutely go into any of the endgame content. The only thing about this that is restricted is there's a higher difficulty tier for endgame called veteran difficulty. You can't go into vet content until you've hit level 50. That's the only hard lock there. So you can run any dungeon in the game. You can't run it on the higher difficulty until you've unlocked, until you've gotten to 50. But you're still running the same content.
So, I'm hearing that the game is unlocked early. So then, mm-hmm. Stark, here's my question as a new player popping into a Twitch stream. Should I bash my face against this wall grinding things called dolmens for experience and maybe burn out on day 3 of ESO and miss out on all the wonders? Is that a good option for me?
I'll be honest, I think I've done dolmen grinds like 3 times on characters on alts.
So what are dolmens?
Dolmens are these little things you'll encounter wandering around the world where Molag Bal will throw a bunch of his Daedra at you as he's trying to open an anchor between Cold Harbor, his realm, and Nirn, the world you're on. And then you have to fight off a series of enemies. It's going to be 4 waves of enemies plus a boss wave. And it can be a lot of fun. And when you've done 20 in a row, it can be kind of disorienting. And when you've done 50 in a row, you're going to wonder, where is my face?
So you're telling me it's fun if I walk past one and I hear a big old anchor falling and it's convenient.
Oh, yeah, they're fun to run.
But it's not also, so fun if it's 60 hours straight grinding these consistently similar things.
Also worth noting with those, there's actually a substantial XP payout the first time you finish one. Like each dolmen. So there's Okay. There's three in each zone.
Yeah.
There's in all 15 of the original base game zones, plus another 10 in Cyrodiil. So there's a bunch you can hit, and, you know, hit each one once. Yeah, you'll get a lot of XP that way. But running back through and hitting them over and over again, not so valuable. And also, particularly, I'm thinking of the Alakir Desert here, and also Aradon to a lesser extent. There are ones that will just be so saturated with players, you won't really see anything that's going on. You won't learn anything. Just run in and hope you hit some things. And if you did manage to get damage on something during the run, you get a reward for it. But they're not really great for anything other than you get the completion XP. And you see a lot of people, especially in the Alakir Desert, where they run in and they're just getting that completion XP. Because there's a large tick for the first time you finish it, and then smaller ticks for finishing it each time after that, and they'll level on that. And then they'll come into the Dungeon Finder at 160, and you'll be wondering, how did this player get this far? Because they haven't learned how to play, and they're wondering what they're doing. I'd strongly encourage not doing that. The only time I'd even consider Dolmen grinding is if you're going in there on an alt character for a class you already know. Like if you've already got a max level DK, you've been running DKs for months, and you're like, okay, I want to level another DK because I want to try something different with the class, but I don't want to spend a lot of time. You can hit the Dolmens. They're not as good as they used to be for XP, but it's still a valid way to get a character to level cap quickly. The same thing with the other thing we've got penciled in here in a moment, Skyreach. If you've got a character, you already know how they play. Skyreach is a legitimate way to just force it to level cap quickly and understand what's going on. Not something I'd encourage for somebody who isn't already very familiar with the game and is basically making the informed decision to skip all the content and all the stuff they're going to have to grind up afterwards, specifically to test something on an endgame character.
And so that's kind of why we presented that to you guys in that flow, that we said questing is a very holistic approach. You get your skill points, you get your unlocking achievements, which you're going to want once you've hit the true addiction phase to this game. Yeah. Once you're investing your life into ESO, you're going to want those achievements. But you're learning at a pace that is tied together with your character. So you're unlocking your skills, you're leveling through, you're getting some money, you're doing all of this at once. It's a very holistic everything. In addition, you can do your Dungeon Finder and your Battlegrounds, which are also great ways to learn group combat. You know, learning how to do a DPS or a healer in a dungeon is a great thing for later on in the game. You will want to know how to do that, and you can try it out, especially at lower levels when the training wheels are on, as we kind of talked about in the past. But we often get the question from brand new players that say, I hear that Dolmen grind is the way to go. Well, like Stark said, you will get that XP, but man, you're going to miss out on so much of the game. You are going to be looking at like 1% of all that is ESO, and you're going to be looking at that 1% for hours instead of going out and kind of just seeing those sweeping, just amazing content pieces that you can get through, the great storylines that catch you up in lore and things like that. Like Stark said,
you're also going to seriously suffer for not learning how to play.
Mm-hmm.
It's easy to learn. I'm familiar with this from other MMOs where you're coming from one that's got a fairly standard hotbar based combat system, which ESO looks like at first glance. The entire point is in understanding rotation is simply understanding when to hit the buttons in sequence. And you can, at least in most hotbar based games I've played, you can pretty easily nail a rotation if you know how to make it work. But with ESO, there's actually a fairly substantial skill element, both for placement and for timing and getting abilities in, that it doesn't work the same way. So you end up with players at max level that have never really learned to play the game from this, because their entire experience has been in situations where there were so many people around them, and many of those players were players who knew what they were doing, to the point that the content, the dungeons were basically negated.
Good point. And it's not, you know, I want to counterpoint my own statement there for a second, or add a caveat to it and say Dolmens are fun, like you stated, Stark. Mm-hmm. I mean, they are.
Yeah.
If you are doing them in moderation, just like when you see one drop out of the sky, it is really fun to do. So don't take this as us saying, like, never do a Dolmen and you will die. But
absolutely, run them the first time you find them. And also, if you're looking for jewelry for a set later, like in the zones that have them, Those can be a very easy way to get that, because every time you complete one, you're going to get a jewelry piece from that zone. And so it's actually a good one for that. There are uses for them, and they're a lot of fun, especially if you've got a small group there of like two or three people. It's engaging content, and it'll scale the number of players that are there up to a limit. The problem is when you get into these large Dolmen train, they actually exceed that cap. So you'll have 20 or 30 people on a single Dolmen. There are so many people there that the game does not adapt above it. I think the cap is about four players for its scaling. And yeah, you just don't get... You get experience in the sense of XP points, but you don't actually gain experience in the sense of learning to play the game. You don't learn it. And that's where we see a lot of players... Well, at least where I've seen a lot of players come out of with question marks. If you're running... if you're running normal quests, or you're running more contained content that isn't getting zerged down, then you're going to learn a lot more about how to play. Mm-hmm. And you'll still have this thing where it's like, well, I'm still feeling weak. Like if you get to a certain point in the game, you're going to start coming up against stuff that's going to require more than you've already reached in your personal skill, probably. But it's not going to be as quick or as severe where it's just like, well, wait, what do I do now? And it's basic stuff that was in the tutorial that's been forgotten or missed because it was never reinforced.
Yeah, I think that's important. I think that's important for people to understand that there is so much of the game available day one that they're not content gated for almost, you know, anything. And to take everything in some moderation here. If you are looking to try out a dolmen and you've never seen one, also called a dark anchor, you need to just look around the map for an icon. It will look kind of like almost like a hurricane style shape. It's circular and got little points shooting off towards the right. Kind of in a circular motion.
We actually have a technical name for those now. They're incursions.
Incursion.
Because there's also because there's also the geysers in Somerset that use the same icon and are a very similar structure. They're, though the difficulty is significantly higher.
So we're running those a little bit.
Yeah, the technical term for them, those incursions. I think the first time we got that confirmation was actually with the preview stuff for the Halloween event this year.
Well, it does make sense. So kind of to give you a little bit of background before we move on, they are I don't know that they're timed. They're sporadic that they open up. It's in an order, right? There's actually a one.
Yeah, it's a sequence. I'm not sure how Somerset sequences theirs.
Oh, fair.
But they're in a sequence. So
The point is, enjoy them if they're going past or that you see one coming down, but you'll see some cult members kind of open one up, and then bosses will start flying, and you might start flying across the map if you don't know how to fight the monsters well enough. And then kind of to touch on what Stark said a little bit ago, Skyreach is another one you might hear thrown around. And you want to talk to them just very briefly what Skyreach is, Stark?
Okay, so Skyreach is part of a zone called Craglorn. The entire zone was originally designed basically to be endgame content for groups. So it's an entire zone that was originally designed around the idea of you running around there in four-man groups the entire time. It's for what it is, it's actually pretty fun. It's got some neat encounters. It's got some cool content. And as with everything else in the game, it's now open to you as soon as you hit level. So once you hit level 3 or so and you're out of the tutorial, you can just go straight to Craglorn if you want. Keeping in mind that it's all group content, that's not a terrible idea if you've got friends and you want some stuff that's scaled to having a full group. The catch is you see a lot of people that will suggest using specifically Skyreach Catacombs. And while I would say, yeah, if you've got people, run through it once, run the quest, you know, it's a daily, and you can go through, get some goodies, and go on your day. However, there's a couple of optional events in there that some players will go in and they will deliberately trigger the optional event. And that's basically going to be their day. They're going to run the event over and over again because it spawns a lot of skeletons that you have to fight off.
A lot.
And they'll take the kill XP from that. Yeah, it's kind of ridiculous. They'll take the kill XP from the skeletons, leave the instance, come back in, reset it, and do the event again and again. And again, and particularly with a lot of these, when you're seeing it thrown around in zone, they're talking about carries. So you'll have somebody who's experienced and can run the four-man content alone, and you'll go with them just to get the XP for clearing. Now, like with the dolmens, you're not going to learn from that.
Right.
It's one way you can rapidly level up a character. And if you've got an alt, and you know, if you're on an alt and you're doing this and you've been doing this for years, or even if you're doing this for months, but you've got a solid grasp of how your class plays and you just want an extra one for some other purpose, it's viable. But it's not going to be a good way to learn the game. And it's not a good way to get XP to begin with. Also worth noting, both the Dolmens and Skyreach have had their XP return XP rewards nerfed. So they're not as rewarding as they once were. So sometimes you'll see people that are looking at these and assuming these are the best place to get XP in the game. I don't think that's still true, but also you've got people working with out-of-date information where it's like, oh yeah, no, you need to do this because this is the most efficient way to level, and that's simply not true.
Yeah, and I think Stark has a very important, very scientific note here in our show notes that says that doing these will numb your mind. And I feel like that is a great way to say that.
Yeah, I think that was actually you.
Was it me?
That's your note, yeah.
I said, okay, I will take credit for it. I have no idea. Maybe it's just numb my mind then. I did Skyreach for the first time not long ago, and I could tell immediately that I wasn't cut out for that. So maybe I wrote that immediately. My mind had been numbed with just one run through of it.
That's possible, yeah.
I
do actually like the content there.
The content's fine.
If you're going in there to do this as the quest, and it's sort of it's this alternative to dungeons, they're fun. There's some really fun stuff in Kraglorn to do, but that one was picked specifically because of the saturation of the enemies in it, and specifically on that event, because it dumps so many at you so fast.
Yeah.
It's not really great stuff to run through if you're like, yeah, no, I'm new to the game and I want to learn, or I'm new to the game but I need to get to level 50 so that I can participate in endgame because that's where the game starts. No, the game starts as soon as you get out of the tutorial.
And that's exactly it. Take advantage of that. And that's what we always try and warn people, you know, in Twitch chat is, hey, you can do whatever you want right now. You can go and you can explore as long as you're about level 10. The world is your oyster, and getting level 10 takes all of, I don't know, you know, a short amount of time. You can get there very fast and then go explore, go get into some dungeons, go get into some PvP. And as Stark said, you can even do it beforehand, but those are when the finders open up for you, so you can auto queue. One thing also to mention is that there are experience scrolls within Elder Scrolls Online. And these are things to take advantage of. I personally like to use mine before I run. If I know, let's say I'm getting into a group and we're going to run a couple dungeons in a row with very little downtime, I like to pop an XP scroll before I run into one of those, because I know we'll be downing a lot of bosses. We'll probably be moving quickly. There's not going to be huge gaps between experience coming my way. And if you're looking to get a hold of some of these XP scrolls, you can get those a lot of the time, especially this month of September. There was a good chunk of them in our daily rewards. So when you log into the game every day and you're opening your daily reward, I believe we just got three 150% experience scrolls just a couple days ago, which is great. So those will last on your character for approximately like an hour to 2 hours, something like that. And they vary, the hour amount varies, but they're a great asset to use. The only thing you don't want to do is pop one of those scrolls and then let your character just sit idle in town. You will end up losing it. But you can always log off if you need to step away, and you will come back to the game and have your same remaining time left for the scroll.
Oh, one important note on logging off. If you're presented with a timer saying, you'll log off in 10 seconds and then it times down, or you can skip it, do not skip it if you're wanting to preserve buffs on a character.
Really?
This may have been fixed, but at various times in the game's existence, there's been a bug where if you skip that timer, it does not properly halt your buff timers counting down. So
if you've
got a buff on you that you care about, just let the timer run out. It's only going to take 10 seconds.
Yeah. You can already start getting up from your computer in that 10-second window.
Yeah.
So no loss there. Any other thoughts on those XP scrolls, Stark? Anything for people to look out for?
I usually recommend holding off on your XP, using your XP scrolls until you get to 50, and then use those as you're advancing through champion ranks. So there's a couple of reasons. The big one is your XP scales as you level up, so you get more XP at higher levels. When you get to 50 and you're into champion ranks, that basically stalls out. You're getting a fixed amount of XP to progress through. also because champion points advance account wide, and because you're going to be needing a lot of XP to advance that system to its fullest, you're going to get more bang for your buck if you hold off on that a little bit and then use them once you're getting to 50 and trying to get up to 160 and beyond that. But that's just preference. If you want to use this to get to 15 faster, or you want to use this to get to 50 faster and get access to vet content, that's what it's there for. And it's entirely viable either way.
Yep, I think that's a great point. So now we kind of want to pivot to talking about what do you do when you're leveling up and you're getting these skill points, whether they're from quest rewards that we mentioned or just from pure leveling. Your character now has skill points. Most of the time you guys will either on your first character be doing the tutorial and therefore get 3 skill points that way, or you'll be skipping the tutorial if you're making maybe a second character in a row or something, and your character's just been given about 3 levels and now you have 3 skill points to spend. Where do you put those and how do you level up your skill system? Stark, do you want to start off with this idea? Your class skill lines?
Okay, yeah. So each class has 3 skill lines. These are unique to each class, and it's the one thing that's actually different depending on which class you picked at creation. And we talked about last week, we talked about how your equipment is far more formative in how your character will function in combat and what you'll be able to do. But this is where your class choice actually matters, because each class, and like I said, has 3, those will form the framework for options you have that nobody else will get. When you immediately start out, you're going to want to grab the first skill in your first active skill in each of those lines so that they'll start leveling. As with some of the others, but specifically as with with class skills, each slotted skill will give you about 15% of your total XP counted towards that skill line. As that skill line advances, you'll get access to more advanced skills and passives in that skill line. So this will give you access to more options, and it will give you access to some that will actually make your character significantly more powerful. Sometimes you'll even want to slot actives into a class line you're not going to do much with, simply because you want to unlock the passive abilities. Offhand, this includes things like the Sorcerer, which gets a bonus to your weapon and spell damage based on the number of class abilities slotted. But if you want that bonus, you're going to need to specifically go into the Stormcalling tree to unlock it. They also have things where they get an increase to their recovery rates. The Nightblade has that as well. With the Warden, you've got one that will increase damage based on... Oh, actually, I should talk about that. With the Warden, you have one that will increase your damage based on the number of skills slotted from that skill line. There's a lot of them that will do something like that, where it's like if you have a skill from this line slotted, or if you have this number of skills in this skill line slotted. So those are fairly easy to realize, wait, this passive will be more valuable if I'm focusing on the skill line. But almost all of the skill lines have something that's going to be useful to you regardless what you're doing. So you're going to want to get all of these skills maxed out just to get access to those passives, if nothing else.
That is a great point. So looking at the Sorcerer, for example, we are saying that you want to grab the first skill, active skill available from Daedric Summoning, Dark Magic, and Storm Calling. That way, you've got them all 3 slotted on your bar. And would you say you're gaining about 15% of your total experience is going towards those skills?
Yeah. So here's how that works. And the way I phrased it was a little strange. Let's say you go out there, you earn 1,000 XP. Mm-hmm. Each of those skill lines will get 150 XP for each skill from that skill line slotted. So if you go out there and you get, you've got 6 skills on your bar because you get 5 skills and an ultimate, and you pick 2 from each skill line, each one will get about 300 XP each time you level up. Or each time you advance that skill at all, or each time you advance any XP, they'll get about 30% of that added to it. Let me just make that as confusing as possible.
You're fine.
So what this will do is, as you're advancing, as you're leveling up, your skill line will advance with you, and you'll get access to more passives, you'll get access to more active abilities that you may prefer. And there is a strong focus in grabbing skills further down the tree to swap out for ones that are higher, that are earlier, that you unlocked already. Not because they're more powerful, but because they offer different utility.
Yeah.
So when you're looking at classes, and this is not universal, but... in many cases, some of the stuff at the bottom of the tree where you're going to have to go all the way to 50 or close to it can be really useful for your ability to function overall. So you need to look at everything that's there and figure out what's available. Fortunately, there's only 18 skills per class before you consider morphs. So you can start to be able to get an idea what the class will do if you sit there and you look at your options. I realize this is a little daunting to start with, but it's a good idea to just simply start, grab one from each, and then advance each of them as you go. And then as stuff unlocks, look at them and decide, is this something I want or something that might be useful? And think if there's options that you could make this work that are a little outside the box, because some of this stuff, I'm looking at a Nightblade right now, but some of the stuff will actually ask you to do stuff with a class that you might not have thought you were for. The Nightblade, for example, has Grim Focus, which I think we've ragged on before. It's very important to making the class work for DPS, and it's buried down there and looks very sort of strange and irrelevant until you actually get it out and start playing with it and start realizing it's a significant buff for the class.
I've got to say, on a very personal note, this is one of the game mechanics that I enjoy the most when I'm starting a new character, is the kind of the trickle unlock that you go through when doing this. This is where I find some of the most personal achievement, exploring a class, is to say, cool, I just, my dark magic skills or whatever has just hit that next thing. So now I can unlock my next skill point. That's, like I said, just a me thing. But when we go to that idea of what are you really playing the game for? Well, if you're enjoying the idea of leveling, the idea of going out there and building a character, and this game is one that supports a lot of role players, a lot of people that just honestly want to stop and smell the roses, this is kind of one of those things where you are incrementally unlocking what it means to be a sorcerer, or like you're saying, a Nightblade. You're getting some new skills that force you, or allow you, I should say, maybe, to do something in a different way. And we kind of touched on morphs a little bit, and I think we should just take 1 second to kind of say that a morph is whenever you get one of these skills, let's say the first skill in each of these lines, whatever, when you take that and it levels up 4 times, as Stark was saying, you're gaining experience for it. So when it levels up an entirety of 4 times and the bar fills up again, you'll notice an icon. It's like, I think, three diamonds.
Yeah, 3 little diamonds, yeah.
And that, if you click on that, will show you 2 different options. Those are your morphs. And it will give you, usually it's a utility difference to the spell. So it might make a spell go from being a magic spell to a stamina spell. It might give, let's say, some sort of regeneration bonus to it versus something that maybe negates a mechanic. You know, there's many different options. But the point is, now you're forking that line. You're saying, well, I want to be this type of player, so this skill is more applicable to me. And that just goes down to that idea of you're spending your skill points to do something that you want to do and that's viable for your idea.
This is also one of the things you really do miss out on if you're jumping in and grinding up to level cap and then coming back and looking. Because, like I said, there's 18 class skills for each class. That's a lot to sit there and process through each one and figure out what each one does.
Yeah.
Especially if you're just having to sit down fresh and go, wait, what does all this stuff do? If you get to a point where it's like you do the first 3 and then you jump in and you're doing Skyreach carries and you come back, or doing Dolmen grinds or whatever and come back out, look at it. It's a lot of stuff to internalize, and you can actually end up in a situation where you're not really sure how a class plays. This has certainly been an issue for me, actually, with the, and I mentioned the Dolmen grinding earlier. I do basically know what I'm doing with the game. I am still not an expert on the Templar or the DK, because in both cases, the way I got them to level cap originally was Dolmens. And like, it was like, okay, well, I don't need to. It's my 8th character. It's my 12th character. I really don't care. I just want this at level cap. And did not learn either of those classes in the process. So it's like, I'll still get things where it's like somebody will ask, what does the Templar do here? And it's like, not sure. I actually don't remember.
Well, and I've said I suffered from a bit of that myself on my Templar when I used a cookie cutter build for it. So I pulled someone's build offline and said, well, these are the best 10 abilities to slot, so I'm not going to go ahead and try those other ones. And I took the opposite approach on my warden, and I said, well, I'm going to get a little of all of these, and I'm just going to see how they play. If I like it, great. If I don't, pop it off the bar and slot something else in. And it's been a whole different level of fun, because I'm seeing what the versatility of the class is. As I've said, I personally am excited when a new skill point or skill opens up for purchase, because that's a new opportunity. And if you're questing through at a common pace, let's say you're running some of those delves with your friends and you're just doing some quests on the side, you get to kind of see in a more calm way how those skills affect and how they can be morphed to benefit you and the group, versus the mistake I made. Like I said, I took a cookie cutter build and I said, well, this is good, this is good, this is good. And just like you, Stark, now I don't know. I'd say about 3 or 4 Templar abilities per skill line. You know, if you go into the healing skill line, I'm like, well, I use that one and only that one.
Yeah, that actually might be the only skill line I actually do have internalized from the temple. Hilariously. But yeah, it's it does create a thing. It also creates a weird thing because you're running into this. There's a hard difference between somebody who's played a class a lot and knows it and somebody who's just learning it. Because I'll actually do stuff like that. Not talking about a Templar, but when I was leveling my second and third Wardens, because I'd gone through and I'd really got nailed the class the first time through, I knew what I was after. I knew the skills I was chasing. Same thing also with my third Sorcerer, because by that point I'd leveled 2 Sorcerers to cap naturally. I'd done a lot of tanking on one of them. I'd done a lot of DPS on the other. So I started making choices that basically violate the advice we gave at the beginning, which was put one in each, because I knew going in, I only a little bit of dark magic to get the passives I want up front on this character for what I'm going to do. Mm-hmm. So focus more heavily on storm calling, make sure that I get that leveled up as fast as possible, and focused less on dark magic. Don't remember if I actually bought any Daedric summoning powers for a while. Again, there's useful stuff there, but not stuff I was worried about having unlocked as fast as possible. And this is valid. If you know the class, if you're making an informed decision that I'm not going to bother with this, even though it's going to actually be really useful, but it can create a serious disconnect when you're looking at somebody else who does know what they're doing and has familiarity with the game, and they're actually skipping the stage of learning because they already know what they're chasing and because they have a basic idea of how the XP system works for skill line advancement. They're making an informed decision that they're making a decision where they understand the opportunity cost. And if you're just emulating that, you can actually screw yourself up because, again, you don't get access to the tools you need to learn it. And it's something I would encourage not doing, but if you see somebody doing it, it's not, oh yeah, no, this is terrible. It's they might be chasing something else. They may also be making the same mistake that Kyle did, which is trying to work from a build from scratch to start with and not really learning the class.
I really love how you said that, how you said, you know, you're skipping the learning, because that is exactly what happened, too. I played my first character from scratch, really enjoyed him, did him very unique, then looked at some builds, which expanded my mind. They taught me some different skills that were out there that I had I not seen the guide, I would have never known that that was an option for me. So that, I think, is one of the most healthy ways to use a guide, if you so choose to get that outside advice, is experience and learn, and then take guidance on other options. Then from there is when I jumped into a Templar and did a cookie cutter, all pre-made sort of thing, and that was a backfire. Now back to, you know, rebelling against that idea and doing it all me all the time, and that has been the most fun, and I've learned the most from him, because I can just say, oh yeah, I love that skill, I know what that does, even though I don't use it anymore, it's there.
Yeah, I will say with builds, specifically looking at people's cookie cutters in ESO, it can be really useful, and I would encourage taking some time and looking at what other people are doing with the game, because very often, well, because there's so much option, very often when you go to another player's builds and you look at what they're doing and how they're doing it, you can get insights that you wouldn't have seen beforehand. So I think I accidentally may have lit up Alcast a little bit last week, but he's absolutely an excellent builder, because when you're going through, he's actually written out why he's doing this stuff or how you're supposed to use this stuff. And with a little bit of experience, a little bit of understanding how the class works together, you should see what the pieces he's using are there for and what your options are within that, even just to take pieces of this and go, okay, but this will work for me over here. And so in that sense, yeah, looking at these guides, looking at them and saying, oh, hey, here's these options that I could use and I could mess around with. can be really good, especially when you're dealing with somebody like Alcast or like Zynode, writes out their entire reasoning. Mm-hmm. I think Gill and Wooler also do. They're just these full explanations of why they did this way and what the motivations were. And you can get pieces or you can get ideas where it's like, well, this set would be nice to use. Not necessarily it's the best, not necessarily it's the only one, because there isn't really a best in slot here at all. But you can get ideas from other people. And so in that sense, build guides are absolutely something worth looking at, but do not treat them like a cookie cutter.
Man, do you think that like people that like they really like their polar opposites, do you think they just hate us, Stark? Because we always say something along the lines of, go the middle ground. Should I do dolmens? Yes or no? When convenient. When convenient, yeah, definitely convenient. Do them.
When it sounds like a fun time to just, you know,
right.
Do a quick boss rush fight, right. Yeah, absolutely. If you want a wave-based encounter right now, yeah, go for it.
Guides, yes or no? Well, explore and learn, but also reference when you are ready to, you know, suck in some more material. Don't treat it as the gospel.
Even when you are looking at it, like, look at it as, you know, what did this person think about this stuff? Not if you see a guide that just says, yes, use this, and doesn't say why, doesn't talk about their reasoning, don't.
Yeah. Yeah, and there's also some encouragement, I think, too, of, and this is just a cultural thing within the community, that, and it depends on what camp you fall in, because some people are natural min-maxers by their very nature, that they, you know, they want to choose the absolute best option. You can use a guide and build your own thing off of it from what Stark's saying. You know, you can internalize their notes and why they did things this way. But then you say, well, you know what? I actually am kind of, I noticed that me as a person, I'm not so great at using that one mechanic. Well, then you have two options. You can either learn to use that mechanic, or you might notice that a different mechanic works better for you and your group's play style. You know, maybe it's more encounter-based for you and how you just carry yourself that a certain skill works a little bit better. So again, we take the middle line and say, pull from both to make what works for you. Anything? Oh, I guess we should say this too. Speaking of morphs in here, that you can respec your morphs.
Yeah. Respecing morphs is way cheaper than respecing the entire skill line. So, or the entire, well, respecing all of your skills.
Yeah.
So if you do morph something, like you'll get to the point where you can morph it. You can see the options if you have an available skill point. At that point, if you do morph something one way and then later everyone's yelling at you, no, that was the wrong choice, and you choose to listen to them, which sometimes people know what they're talking about, sometimes they don't, it's very cheap to simply go in and swap out your morphs. And that now benefits from the new skill respec UI, so you can just go right there and fix the one you screwed up. Even on characters that have hundreds of skill points spent, you're still probably looking at less than 2,000 gold to respec your morphs.
So. Yeah. Very affordable. And you guys might see that as being a benefit if you... sometimes a morph can be very specific to a certain playstyle, and this makes me think of my Nightblade, who I do have as a healer. But in his siphoning tree, he takes some DPS hits because his spells are morphed in a way that they now provide extra healing to the party or do something beneficial instead of doing extra damage to the target.
Yeah.
So once you look at, you know, using three or four of his spells that are all morphed healing, he's kind of handicapped himself in what damage he can do with those same spells. That being said, you know, unlock a little bit of everything, experiment with it, because purchasing those skill points, I mean, again, totally down to the player type, but you can also pick up some strong DPS other skills that you want to use too, that aren't morphed, that are morphed more towards DPS than healing, for example.
Also, one of the other major changes you'll run across are abilities that switch from magicka to stamina.
Mm-hmm.
So we good talked call. About stam builds earlier, but if you're working towards a character where you're wanting to do a stam build, it's a good idea to figure out, well, to find those skills as you're going and then switch those over to stamina when you're, because you'll do significantly more damage if you're pulling from your larger resource pool with your larger weapon or spell damage pool. So, yeah. It's useful, and it can actually, it does open up options a lot in ways you might not expect if you're unfamiliar with ESO, because it does allow you to run with a physical damage type character in a class, even like the Sorc, where you might not expect that's a real option.
Yeah, yeah. I still can't even believe a sorcerer can be a stamina sorcerer, but whatever. What do I know?
I don't know. I've just had a Stamsorg for like 3 years.
Well, I think that's some really good information on class lines there, Stark. I hope hope we didn't overwhelm anyone. I don't think we did. I think that was probably one of the best ways to kind of ease people into it, because it is going to be such a large portion of your time in the game is really doing that. And just knowing that you, with a gold cost, can remove any mistake that you make in there. If you at some point want to level a bunch of skills while you're getting to 50, and then actually, and as a reminder, you will get a skill respec scroll for free when you're, what is it, like level 47 or something like that, ish?
It's somewhere in there. I know there's a skill point and an attribute point respec scroll thrown in there. And it's somewhere in the high 40s. I don't remember exactly where it pops.
So once you get up there and you say, well, crap, you know, I really need some more skill points. I have all these other options. I could go get Sky Shards. I can go do public dungeons. I can go do that to get more skill points. But for now, I realize I don't like a bunch of these skills that I've already picked up and played with. You can use that scroll and take those points out, for example. Another thing to keep in mind is that there are enough skill points to do pretty much anything you want to do.
The current cap for skill points available in the game is 407. I think two of those are mutually exclusive, so you can only get one of them. But even if that's true, it's still 406 skill points. In practice, getting over about 300 is going to take some time and commitment, but it is absolutely possible to end up with way more skill points than you can spend.
Yeah. I think that's a very good way to put that. So, experiment, explore. Now, we're getting short on time for this episode. Actually, very short. I think we're over the 50-minute mark at the moment. So we have a lot more to talk about, and we'll probably bump this towards next week to continue this idea. Actually, this might fit in very well next week if we decide. Today we were going to talk to you guys about battle mechanics, such as blocking, dodging sort of stuff. But we bumped that because we think that, you know, skill points are something very, very important. Before you can even go to dodge a skill or dodge an attack, you need to know how to attack somebody.
Something I forget if I've said on air before. I know I've spoken to you about this before. When you start and create a character, you have a significant buff to your max health, your max magic, and your max. This means on a low-level character, for your gear and for your setup, you actually do considerably more damage and can take considerably more abuse than a higher level character can. So what this means is when you're just starting out and you're feeling out your character and you haven't learned how to play yet, the game is actually propping you up a little bit and giving you some help. As you level, that buff goes away. So you'll end up at higher levels. If you simply jump through without learning mechanics, it will get considerably more difficult and you'll feel weaker because you're not doing as much damage as you were simply for light attacking and slapping it around. So one of the reasons why it's like, if you want to spend time grinding, talked about this earlier, you want to spend time grinding, you really want to learn the enemy mechanics. You can do a lot of damage to an enemy if you know how they function, if you get a feel for their behavior. But if you're just relying on stats and saying, well, I'm going to level up so I'll have better stats, that's not the way this works.
Agreed. I think that's a good point. Use your training wheels while you have them, because you will notice it when it starts to wear off. Now, so next week we're going to tackle weapons and armor, how those gain their experience, your world skills, which include things like Ledgerman for stealing and pickpocketing, your soul magic, vampire and werewolf trees, and we're going to talk about the individual guilds you can join within the game. I think a quick call out is make sure you do go and join the Mages and Fighters Guild right away. Those are two guilds that you should join on every single character. At first, it might feel to you, I felt that it wasn't very lore-friendly. My character's definitely not going to be in the Fighters Guild, but the perks within it are well worth it, and you'll see that these are very passive things that you can actively grind if you wish, but you can gather them over time if that's more your style.
Especially with the Fighters Guild, because that's one of the only guilds in the game that does not have retroactive XP. There's stuff you can do that you can't get the XP back from with all of them, I think, but with the Fighters Guild specifically, you want to join as quickly as possible, because the advances you get in the guild just do not get awarded to you afterwards. So you don't get back credited for whatever you've done before you joined. With the Mages Guild and most of the others, if you've done stuff that would advance the skill line before joining, you'll actually get back credited for what you missed on the way in. But again, Fighters Guild's unique in that respect, so definitely join them as fast as possible.
So that's your homework this week, you guys. If you rolled a new character and you haven't stopped by the Fighters Guild or the Mages Guild, make sure you do. There will be I don't know what they call them. He's not the guild master necessarily, but like the kind of the chapter leader or something of that individual guild hall. And you can talk to them and they will cue you, they'll like add you into the guild. It's basically accepting a quest and it will right then and there unlock the skill chain for you. So now you will see it. So if you're on PC and you hit K, you will successfully see a Mage's Guild skill line within there and a Fighter's Guild skill line. So you'll be able to kind of look at what tantalizing options you can buy for passives and actives. And there's some really good stuff. So Stark, I think we did a great job kind of giving people a good rundown of where they should go, how they should do things. Remember to slot a bunch of different abilities on your bar from your class so that you're experimenting and actively gaining. Ooh, one thing we should call out is when you get the ability to swap your bars, when you get the ability to back bar, you know, swap between bar one and bar two, whenever you hand in a quest and you get a burst of XP or whenever you down a boss, that experience goes to the bar that is active at the time. Right. So if you're trying to level a skill, say you picked up some sort of whatever, tanking skill or a healing skill, and it's on your back bar, but you want to level it, make sure you flop to that bar when you're handing in a quest. Or try to have it up if you can when you're downing that boss. Because, again, the goal with skills is to take them from 1 to 4 so that you can morph it to what it's going to be. Eventually it's end game sort of thing for you. So in that gain, in that grind for that rep in its own, or that rep in its XP for those in its own way, make sure you're using the bar actively. And you might even in some ways want to swap them around on occasion just to make it convenient for you when leveling up. But that's not something you really have to worry about until you get your first character to 15. And then
also, if you forget to turn something in on the wrong, you know, you turn something in on the wrong, no worry. We all do that
all the time. All the time. Yeah. It's lucky if I remember. Like, I've got this kind of like mental note now, but that's about it. Well, everybody.
I forget, so.
I think that does it. What do you think, Stark? Anything else? Any burning notes you got?
I don't think anything we need to throw in today.
Good. Then that, I think, leaves people at a very healthy point. They can kind of look at vampires, werewolves, and guilds over the next week here. They can make sure they're signed up for the guilds so they know what we're talking about. And make sure to spend those points freely. Stark, anything to pimp this week?
No, I think just this, actually.
Okay, well, then go
follow. That'd be a little strange, yeah. Go follow this podcast you've been listening to.
Hey, if you guys haven't heard of The Tenants, you can go follow that on iTunes and all your other apps. But, yeah. So I'm over on Twitter at Kyle Dempster Studios. There's not the full studios at the end. At Kyle Dempster, STU. I'm over on Twitch at Kyle Dempster Studios there as well. I guess without the at. So twitch.tv/Kyle Dempster Studios. Like I said, we just dinged the application for partner thing. So I got to do some homework of my own, Stark. I got to do some typing tonight, I guess.
Okay.
So congrats. That's what I'm off to do. Thank you very much. I appreciate it. It's all thanks to you and the rest of the gang that hangs out. So until next week, everybody, we'll leave you with your homework and we'll see you next Sunday. Bye-bye.